He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz, Julian Council producing. This is Braden and Fitz on ESPN 102.5 The Game. At Braden Gall, at Jason Fitz, if you want to hang out with us on the Twitters. Or you can call us 615-737-1025. As we do every single Monday. Used to do it daily. We brought it back by popular demand.
Or unpopular demand.
Well, that's true. By the demand of no one. Usually on Mondays, I always feel like I'm going to go unfiltered on the NFL or an NFL-related topic. But no, not today. That anger goes towards the Chicago Preds game, but not where you think. It's time to go unfiltered. Ooh.
We all have our filters. Well, most of us. This is Fitz Unfiltered. Now, Jason Fitz.
Oh, my God, just stop. Like, seriously, this conspiracy theory that refs are against the Nashville Predators, that referees are out there calling a game so that somebody wins, just stop. We are only 5 games into the season, and we already have this? I mean, we had to listen to this throughout the entire playoffs. At the end of the game, the Preds are up 1-0. The refs miss what should have been a call. The Blackhawks score the tying goal and go on to win in overtime. It's going to happen sometimes. It happens in every single game, in every single sport. Referees, through and through, at the end of the day, are human. So if there are hundreds of opportunities to make calls throughout the course of the game and they miss one, that's probably going to happen. Heck, the best quarterbacks in the NFL only complete, what, 60-something percent of their passes? So that means about 40% of the time the best quarterbacks in the NFL don't do it right. But you want the referees to be at 100%? You have lost your mind. Preds fans, if you're that guy this morning that's going to come in with some great conspiracy theory, it's on you. If you're that guy that's going to come in this morning and blame a loss on a ref, it's on you. Even in the Jets-Patriots game, which has maybe the worst call I've seen in years, even in that game, I will not blame a referee for a loss, because guess what? There's a lot of game that can be played. There's a lot of opportunity to win a game. Does it stink when a ref misses a call? Yes. All right, it stinks when a ref misses a call. It also stinks when your team doesn't make enough plays to win the game, and ultimately that's what has to happen. It's not about the refs. It's about the guys that actually play the game. There's no conspiracy theory. The refs are not as bad as you want them to be. The fact is the refs at the end of the day are human, and when you learn to do your job perfectly, then you can lecture a ref about theirs. Until then, sit down, shut up, and color in your book.
I think Tony Gwynn got out like 70% of the time he went to the plate.
Duh.
Greatest hitter maybe ever, I've ever seen at least. I completely agree. It's really funny, the dynamic between fans and referees. It's obviously a very interesting part of sports because it gives people an excuse, but that's all it is. It's just an excuse. The ref missed a call in the Blackhawks game. Yes, absolutely. And it's what I find interesting is that the two things can't coexist. Like, hey, they're human, they made a mistake. And also, they're not being paid to make calls against my team. Like, think about, and we always say this, think about what it would take for the NHL, who made a bunch of money, real live money, on the Nashville Predators being in the Stanley Cup final, right? They may not have capitalized on it 100%, but it was, the Predators were good for the NHL. Gary Bettman has a long time been supporter of hockey being in Nashville. That the reason hockey is in Nashville in the first place is the commissioner, Gary Bettman, right? Like, he was the spearhead. This was his pet project. This was a big deal. That would then take him, a guy who has long time been in support of hockey in the city and clearly generates revenue off of hockey being in the city and going deep into the playoffs, him going to the head of officials and saying, I don't think we should help the Predators. Let's go out of our way to make calls against the Predators. Or that referee's a diehard Blackhawks fan. That's the other one I love.
Right.
The referee is clearly a Raiders fan. The referee's clearly XYZ team against my team. And I don't understand why. Listen, bad calls happen, folks. Like, it's just a part of the sport, and we're never going to get it out of the game. Listen to baseball fans talk. They like it when refs get calls wrong. Like, they want the umps to get calls wrong because they're like, for whatever reason, baseball fan, and I don't understand this, and I love baseball. I know you don't. But baseball fans are like,
I love this part of baseball.
Yeah, unwritten rules and
No, I love the managers coming out and yelling at the guy. Well, like if Lavi would skate out and just go off of the guy. Oh.
Baseball fans were having an argument after the Nats-Cubs game on the guy getting back to the plate and taking his hand out the bag, and they're like, yeah, you're out. But, when they're like, well, the spirit of the rule, like,
no, you don't change the
got
no,
back
no, you're
safe.
Either out or you're not. That's it. Like, it's not a spirit of the rule thing.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous.
The spirit of the rule says that he's safe, blah, blah, but his hand got out of the bag.
You're either on the base or you're not. But baseball purist fan will tell you, oh, I like how it's not perfect. I like the human element. Like, baseball fan is the only guy who's like, I like when it's actually a ball, but they call it a strike.
And then Eric Byrne, who is on MLB Network, says, like, you know what? It really made me mad when I played that they would miss these calls. Because you can have an experiment of a baseball game where the pitches are called by a robot. It's like, wow, that game flowed perfectly.
To me, it's a little like, at this point on Twitter, you know, everybody likes to call millennials snowflakes or whatever and go after them. The biggest snowflakes in the world are diehard sports fans because y'all are convinced that and Tennessee, like, this
guy is falling.
Nashville is becoming that. What last week where it's suddenly the refs are against the Titans, and this week the refs are against the Predators. Guess what? Neither
Nobody's
of those franchises are like are so relevant that the refs have to go out and be against them. Right. I mean, it's just it doesn't happen.
You know who the NFL is out to get? The Patriots. Tom right. Brady. Like, that's who they're out to get. They're not out to get anybody else.
Tell me that they're coming in and suspending your player for footballs, or they're making up rules going in, and you could say, you know what, this isn't at all what's in the collective bargaining agreement. You could be like, they have a problem with our franchise, maybe. But a ref misses a call, it doesn't mean suddenly that the world hates Nashville. I mean,
no.
It doesn't mean that the climate of the sports community is against your favorite team. It is such a whiny little society now whenever you don't like a call.
And football and hockey especially, like, baseball is such a slower game that I think the mistakes are magnified. And I think that's – in hockey and football, you could be a trained expert for 50 years watching that sport and still not get the call right in real time. That's how hard it is, how fast hockey and football are in real time. Anybody who's been to a Predators game can sit in the stands and miss things all game long. Because it's just so hard in person to keep up with everything that's going on the ice. And you got three guys out there, and you're going to miss stuff. It's just like in the NFL, you're going to miss stuff. It's too fast. It's too physical. There's too much gray area there when it comes to especially things like interference in hockey and holding in football. It's just hard to catch everything, and it's just the nature of the sport. And listen, was it a bad call on Saturday night? Yeah, it was a bad call. Was it a bad call that Colton Sisson's goal got overturned and wasn't allowed in Game 6 of the Stanley Cup Final? Yeah, it was a bad call. I think Philip Forsberg's skate was up in the air. Reasonable minds can disagree on that. Was it inconclusive? No, it probably wasn't. It shouldn't have been called. I get that. Things go wrong for your team in sports. That's why we watch the games. And but this whole conspiracy theory that the refs are out to get my team is. Referees have never cost anybody a game. I don't believe in my heart, except for the Seahawks-Packers game when the Hail Mary was actually a touchdown on the last play of the game, and the ref said no, incomplete. Like, unless it's the very last thing that happens, and you literally just completely botch the call,
yeah, or you give like an extra down where it doesn't exist,
right? Like, when it's so egregious that you've just made such an unbelievably huge mistake. Like, actually, the field goal was good, and they ruled it no good.
Yeah.
Like, it has to be so egregiously bad to say that's the reason you lost the game. Listen, the Predators were tied 1-1 in overtime. Go win the game. Go win the game. You have not been good in overtime. You need to get better in overtime, and you didn't go win the game. Okay, that's it. That's the end of the story. It sucks. It's a bad call. You played a great game. Take the positives away from it and move on.
At some point, we all just need to stop. Like, just stop with the complaints about the bad calls. Stop with the conspiracy theory that anybody's against your team. Just stop with all of it and accept that humans make mistakes. And at some point, that means there will always be some bad calls. And believe it or not, every ref isn't biased against every single team.
And if you're feeling really bad and you're a Predators fan about all of this, I will talk to you personally, in face-to-face, and I will calm your nerves.
Yes.
And we'll discuss this because the Honky Talk hat trick is back.
Woohoo!
Yes. So tomorrow, starting at 5 o'clock at Tootsie's, Rippies, and Honky Talk Central, brought to you by Bud Light, the Honky Talk hat trick. Every weekday home game, you guys know how tough it is to get tickets to Predators games. We are giving away a pair of tickets to every single weekday home game at every single weekday home game. So come down to Rippies, Tootsie's, Honky Tonk Central. I'm going to be there starting 5 o'clock tomorrow at Honky Tonk Central. You can register to win a pair of tickets to an upcoming home game. Also, VIP hockey experience, which includes a ride on the Zamboni.
What?
So come on down, Honky Tonk hat trick, every weekday home game. Again, I can't stress this enough. probably one of the easiest ways to get tickets to a Predators game is just come to one of those three bars downtown. Every single weekday home game, and we're going to give away tickets.
When we come back, one thing we did learn about the Saturday game is that Chicago is now a rivalry. We'll tell you what we learned, and you'll hear from PK Subban. We'll do all of that next. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Braden and Fitz on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And as much as we have complained about the officials, and as much as it's okay to come in and say, hey, I want to be clear. Like, it's okay to come in and say, hey, that ref stinks. All right, I got no problem with that. But that ref cost us a game, or that ref is biased, or the refs hate the Preds, or the refs hate the Titans. I mean, seriously, go out on any given Saturday or Sunday and look at Twitter and just go up and down and look at what every fan base is tweeting about. Every single fan base is convinced that the refs are against them. We can be better than that as a whole city.
Well, and just look, watch a game and you'll be like, oh, we got away with one there. How many times do you say that in a hockey game? You go, oh, man, they could have called holding there, or they could have called interference. Oh,
but then everybody comes back at the end and they're like, you know what, if they had called this, then we would have won. And it's like, okay, but if they had called that, then we would have lost. I mean, it's just it works its way around.
It's all hindsight.
And circles. But ultimately, none of that's the most important thing that we got out of Chicago, especially there's – we'll tell you what that is in just a second.
But we'll let somebody else tell you.
Chad and Franklin. Chad, what do you got? Thanks for calling the show, man.
Hey, Jason Braden. This is your Twitter buddy.
Hey, Chad.
Ray Crochet.
Hey, man.
Ooh, what's up, man?
What's up, guys? Hey, I completely agree with the mentality on the referees. And I'll give you a quick example, a real quick one. When I was in high school, we went to state, ranked number one, all that good stuff. Senior year, we're still ranked number one based off the year before. And we lose a game to a really bad team, and we're all in the locker room complaining about the refs. And our coach walks in and says, oh, y'all think that was the refs' fault? He says, y'all remember last year we went to state and we were so good? Do y'all remember any bad calls that season? And we all kind of collectively looked around the locker room, and we said, well, no. Like, we all shook our heads collectively. And he goes, that's because we were so good, it didn't matter if the refs had a bad call or not. There were definitely bad calls. He goes, well, when you're good enough, it doesn't matter if one bad call doesn't go your way.
With that mentality,
I always thought that. And, like, to give you an example, 2014, the Dez Bryant caught it or didn't catch it. I'm a Cowboys fan.
That was a great call.
Probably the only Cowboys fan that was like, well, we weren't good enough. If DeMarco didn't fumble it in the third quarter, we didn't need to make that play. If Witten would have made that third down conversion in the first quarter, we wouldn't have needed to make that play. And then that call wouldn't have mattered.
Man, thanks for the call. And I think that's
– there's one that I will say, though, real quickly about that, like, what a catch is a catch is a catch. That is getting into – weird bad territory. It happened again for the Packers yesterday, and I just looked at my dad. I go, that's the Dez Bryant play.
Yep.
Ty Montgomery caught a pass and stumbled. And
but shouldn't we all know that now? Like, now we all watch
right,
and say,
like,
this, this is the Dez play.
It just sucks that it's gotten to that point where we know it's a catch. A guy dives for the end zone but then drops the ball going to the ground, and now we don't know what a catch is. Like, it's just and the NFL keeps making it more and more complicated. So I do think that's, like, a weird one right now that people can complain about. But his point is still valid, which is, that was just one play in the game. There were 160 other plays in the game you could make. And again, to the Predators' point, and we're going to get to what was the most important thing everybody needs to know about the game in the first place, but the point is you still had opportunities to win the game. It was 1-1 going to overtime, and you could have won the game in overtime. And you didn't. Something else happened, and that's just the way the cookie crumbles sometimes. But you have opportunities to go win, and you didn't, and that's just sports. I mean, that's what happens.
So yeah, well, and ultimately –
you have to overcome it.
I mean, you said it this morning. I think that the most important thing about the Chicago game wasn't even the 1 point. It wasn't the officiating. It came in sort of best said by PK Subban. We want you to hear this. This is what PK Subban said after the game about the game.
Well, we were the better team the whole game. I mean, that's not bulletin board material. That's just the numbers don't lie. And I thought we dictated play. But one thing I can say about that team, Chicago, is that it seems that a lot of teams outshoot them, but they always find a way to win. So, you know, we've beaten them before. We know what it takes. But I think what we did today was we took way too many penalties. And, you know, obviously I think that, you know, we would have liked to see some calls go our way. There are some points in the game where, you know, we didn't get those calls. But at the same token, we got to we got to take care of what we can control. And if we're going to stay in the box all season, it's going to hurt us. So we'll learn from that and get better.
Number one thing I took away from that, and I think PK said it right at the beginning of that piece of audio, we were the better team. We totally dictated play. I love that he throws in there, this is not bulletin board material. I like that he throws that in there. He's like, no, I'm not trying to talk trash.
Can you throw that in there and then not like...
Yeah, I don't know.
It's like starting a discussion with your wife where you're like, okay, I'm not trying to argue. You're like, you might as well just take the gloves off then and just
when you
start
with, please don't take this the wrong way.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be taken the wrong way.
Oh, yeah.
Especially with your wife, there's no question. So but PK is absolutely correct, and that's really the most important thing in one out of 82 regular season games, in game five of the regular season in October, the fact that you were facing a hot Chicago team on the road and you completely outplayed them for most of the game is still by far the most important thing that I took away from Saturday night's game. It just how you like in hockey. Yes, the points eventually become incredibly important, but it is so much more about how are you playing, how are you executing, and if you stay out of the box just a couple more times, you probably win that game. And going on the road against that team in this particular developing rivalry, they were mad and angry and fired up, and the Predators completely controlled the game for most of the first two periods. I think that's a really big positive without Roman Josi, without Ryan Ellis, to go up there and do what they did. I actually give them a lot of credit for it. Do you want to see the 2 points? Absolutely. We understand that. We get that. That goes without saying. But how did you play? And they played really good hockey on Saturday night, and that's what I think is by far more important than screaming about a bad call. And it was a bad call. But like the bottom line is you got to deal with those things and move on and overcome them. And they didn't, but again, still most important thing for me is how they played, and they played very well.
I mean, that was a valuable takeaway last year that we learned in the playoffs. I mean, even in the back half of the season, we continued to learn that it was less about the final result. At some point it is, but it was more about how did they look and how is this team playing right now. And I think that to your point, last night or Saturday night, they looked like the better team. They just flat out looked like the better team. And so you're going to win some of those. You're going to lose some of those. The fact is that it looks like everything's on course. Again, Forsberg scores his fifth goal of the season, which is huge. PK at this point, 6 assists. They're getting contributions from the stars. All of the questions that we had coming into the season are starting to sort of round out in a way that we feel good about the answers we're getting. There's a lot of reasons to feel good about it. The only thing to feel bad about is they left a point on the table. And unfortunately, that part of that is going to linger as a bad call, but part of that is also going to linger as missed opportunity.
Well, and frankly, I even asked Lobby about this when we talked to him, or whatever it was last week. Listen, the bottom line is they have to be better in overtime. It's not necessarily a trend yet. It's only been one game this year. But if you look back since the new rules were implemented, this organization has not been good in overtime. So they're going to have to work that out. And whatever that means, whether that's lineup changes or strategy, I don't know. That's up to Lobby and the coaching staff. But clearly, whatever they've done in overtime has not been effective in 2.5, 3 years, whatever it's been, of doing this in this system. They got to be better. And listen, Brandon Saad did it again to him, all right? I don't know what else that guy needs to do before people in this town start to hate that guy. But you got to be better in overtime. And that is an area that I go, man, that's a problem. We got to see where that's going to go.
Well, it doesn't get any better than Pete Weber. Pete Weber going to join us up next. We'll get his thoughts on all things Preds in the Chicago game and how this season looks so far. We'll do that next up. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Don't forget to make your silly underdog picks brought to you by Volunteer Hose and Gasket. Pick 3 college underdog teams you think will win before the weekend college football games begin. To sign up, make your picks, visit thegamenational.com.
Come on, Georgia Tech. God. I had Georgia Tech. I had A&M. Gale was doing good. And then Georgia Tech screwed it all up and lost to Miami.
Well, you know, I have no segue. Man. I have nothing. I got nothing here other
hockey.
Than to go to one of the best in the business. Pete Weber joining us as he does every single Monday. Pete, let's start with the blown call that so many people are up in arms about. We sort of are taking the stance that, hey, referees are human and they make mistakes. Do you take a stance that there's any sort of a perception that referees are doing worse when it comes to the Preds than they do with any other team?
Not particularly. I mean, because I hear, as you guys have sort of alluded to, I hear fans of all teams in all sports complaining about the officiating. So I'd have to say it's equal opportunity screwing.
Do you believe, though, that there's any sort of a bias against the Preds or any particular NHL team?
No, I do not. Absolutely not.
Okay. See, we just that's what I love, Pete. We could start right with the direct stuff.
Equal opportunity screwing. That is pretty good stuff. Pete, let me ask you this, though, because PK said it after the game that they totally outplayed that team. And I think really walking away from that game, that really was the most important thing to me. I think you could say that was a hostile situation going up against a team that beat you last year that's playing good hockey, and you guys absolutely outplayed them. I think that's a really big positive takeaway.
Well, I think it's I think it's absolutely huge. That was clearly the best performance of this season that the Predators have put on. And so, yes, it's unfortunate that they didn't come away with the 2 points, but I also think about the tremendous number of opportunities they had, particularly in the first period, that they didn't cash in on. Had they done that, had they not just been, you know, trying to make a one-goal lead hold up, I think they come away with there with the 2 points. But that part of the luck was not on their side. The guy who had the most chances in the game, Victor Arvidsson, what a game he had. He was all over the place. And we probably are going to end up changing, giving him a middle name, Victor Ubiquitous Arvidsson. Because he was every place he could have been, and he was that black fly that bothers the family picnic. He was all over him.
Pete, you are on fire this morning. So tell me a little bit, because you mentioned best game so far of the season. When you look at this team after, I know it's a very small body of work so far, but you're starting to look at this team. What stands out to you that's been the most impressive thing so far?
Well, one big thing that stands out is the fast, absolutely on fire start for Philip Forsberg. I mean, he is 30-some games ahead of his pace of a year ago, and obviously he's as hot as could possibly be going down the last couple of months of the season, finished with over 30 goals again. But that bodes well for this team. The other thing that I think I really like about it is we've seen younger guys, and already it's had to be a next-man-up approach. Don't know yet about Nick Bonino, who had to leave the ice during the second period of the night. And, of course, the game before that, Yannick Weber, Roman Josi, we all know is going to be a longer-term thing with Ryan Ellis. But as happened in the playoffs last year, next man up has worked pretty well for this team.
How would you evaluate, and I think it's going to be just a question we're going to ask routinely of Sam Girard, because the talent is just so obvious, and it's dripping, and he appears to be the fifth best defenseman on the team. But you know, there's a rookie wall coming, and the development, and the contract, and there's just so much there. How do you know, what parts of the evaluation are most important to you?
His poise. I've never seen him lose it. He's had it from the first day on the ice in training camp. He seems just totally unflappable to me. Now, sometimes you can be unflappable and turn the puck over, like you're working for Pepperidge Farm. But he has not done that at all, and he has been able to create offensively. He had to make some adjustments after his first game in terms of adjusting to the pace of the game at this level, making his plays quicker. But I think he did that and did that very well.
What's the best-case scenario for him to play out this year?
Well, it's best and worst. If it's there any more injuries, number one, and I think he has a really good chance of staying here and making an impact. So that is absolutely huge for someone in his situation, where he still has the junior eligibility and they can't send him to the American League. The idea that he performs while he gets the chance here bodes well for him.
How do you solve overtime problems, Pete?
Quit playing overtime. No, that's one way of solving it. It's a possession-type game. You go against a Blackhawks team, which may be, even over and above Pittsburgh, the best possession team in the league. Chicago and Tampa Bay, I'm going to say. But I guess one thing would be able to wait them out, because they tend to keep the same guys on the ice for a long period of time. Wait till they're gassed, then strike.
So what do you look for? Obviously, Colorado tomorrow. They were a team that I think a lot of people thought were just going to be hot garbage coming into the season, and they've turned out to play pretty well. So what do you look for that matchup?
It's been rather surprising, actually, to see how they've come out of the box, especially with, let's just say, the turmoil surrounding the Matt Duchene situation, who doesn't evidently want to be there, but he's among their leading scorers right now. Semyon Varlamov did not have a good year last year for them in net, or at least not to the level that he had previously. He's back. I think he's playing pretty well. They're still going to be, you would think, a little bit soft defensively. So you want to, if the Predators play against Colorado tomorrow night, as they played against Chicago on Saturday, there should be an awful lot of Tim McGraw replays.
That's fantastic stuff. Pete, you have been on fire. I love Monday Morning Pete.
This mid-season is form.
Mid-season form.
I like it.
It's fantastic stuff. Pete Weber, as always, we appreciate your time, man. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you very much, and see you tomorrow morning after the skate.
It's great stuff from Pete.
Predators, avert your ears, Predators fans. 6-21 in the 5-on-5, or the 3-on-3, 5-minute overtime period. 6-21. That is the second lowest number of wins over the 3 years it's been in place, and the most losses in the NHL. So they're arguably the worst team in the NHL in overtime situations. You can't. The Blackhawks had what, 7 shots in overtime? The Predators had 1. You can't. You got to have more possession. You can't chase the play. As Adam Vingan wrote, it's really sort of mind-boggling. Like they've got such good puck handling defensemen. You would think that would really play itself in a positive in overtime. It's just a strange thing. I don't understand it. So
well, and how long are we going to sit here and hear or say, you know what, it's just going to turn around? Like, eventually these things work themselves out. I don't think this one works itself out. There has to be some aggressive workout of it. I just don't know what that is. I don't know how you get this monkey off your back at this point, because it feels like it's part of it's sort of ingrained in the culture of who the Preds are at this point. And I don't know how to fix that.
Like in the old days of Predator hockey, if this was like 2009 Barry Trotz team, I would say, yeah, 3-on-3 against Chicago is a really bad situation because Chicago is significantly more talented. They're faster. They're better in open space. All that stuff. Like, that makes sense. This is not that Predators team. This is a Predators team that's very good in space. That's got a lot of talent and puck handlers and offensive weapons. Even on defense, you got guys that can take care of the puck and create offense in transition. So it just doesn't make any sense for this to be the most offensive, most talented team that they've sort of ever had, and to also be that bad in those open ice situations, 3-on-3. It's just sort of, again, we're not coaches here, so I can't even pretend to sit up here and give you a solution. But man, it's sort of mind-boggling. 6-21 over that span is awful.
It feels like something disconnects, because obviously Laviolette and the system that they run here has found a way to create and generate offense no matter what during the course of games from unexpected people. We talk about that all the time. It seems like the 5-on-5 system here can just flat out generate goals. And then for whatever reason, when you pair that down to 3-on-3, it's not working. And it can't be, in my mind, it can't be as simple as the guys aren't good enough, because there are some star players here at this point. So I can't on the one hand say, look at the year, for example, you know, Philip Forsberg's having, and he's on fire, and then look at it and say, then overtime.
Like if Connor McDavid has the puck against David Legwand in open space, I expect Connor McDavid to torch him. Like, David Legwand wasn't talented enough. He wasn't good enough to be a guy that could handle that open ice. That's not how this team is built.
Right,
they've got guys that are great in space, so it's just it's bizarre. It's very
well,
strange.
It's baffling. At some point, you do have to feel like the odds are going to work themselves out, and it's going to flip around. I just don't know that may the odds, what was it, ever in your favor?
May the odds be ever in your favor.
Thank you. There you go. There you go. Hunger
Nerd.
Games.
Nerd.
Thanks, Julian.
Hunger Games. Thank you. Brain took me like, what? Do what? I can't do it. But at some point, it's going to level itself out.
I'm holding up my hand. Isn't that the Hunger Games thing?
Put your hand down.
I have no idea. Now
I don't know. My wife
does
it all the time as a joke. I don't know.
Well, speaking of a joke, that's the Tennessee football program. So let's figure out what needs to happen with Butch. We'll answer that question next. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. It's Braden and Fitz coming at you live from the Game Nashville Studios, presented by Wholesale Link of Mount Juliet. The Vols, 34-point underdog to Alabama. Largest in serious history. 34-point underdog. And
that
I don't
is
think
a
that's,
joke.
I don't think it's high enough. I don't think it's high enough.
I would lay the points.
Yeah.
Lay the points.
I mean,
oh, man.
This thing is just we were talking about it earlier, and I saw some guys this weekend out and about that had the big T tattoo on the arm. And I asked, I was like, yeah, how, you know, where are you in Butch?
And the answer was, I just don't care anymore. And, like, that is the worst. When you've gotten to the point that you just flat out, like, you've unplugged from all of it, and you're like, yep, just don't care. That's the worst.
Don't worry, Tennessee fans. I've got some statistical information that'll make you feel better about yourself.
Damn statisticals. Give me them.
You want to know? This will make you all feel better.
I want them. They're statisticals.
In conference play.
Yes.
Just in the SEC alone.
Mm-hmm.
Alabama is averaging 51 rushing attempts per game.
Okay.
For 350 yards per game rushing in just the SEC. That doesn't include, like, Colorado State.
Oh, my God.
They're averaging 350, 3.5 spins rushing the football in SEC play, folks. 400 yards is not out of the question on the ground this weekend for Alabama.
500 is not out of the question. Like, the fact that South Carolina...
And that wouldn't even be the worst number for Tennessee's defense this year.
Yeah, it wouldn't be.
It wouldn't even be the worst.
Oh, my God. Thanks to Georgia Tech.
This is going to be a bloodbath.
I hear opportunity.
The sad thing, too, about Tennessee's defense is, like, South Carolina has looked inept running the football all season long, and they lose Rico Dowdle, their starting running back, in the first half, and their third-string running back just runs all over Tennessee in the second half. It's going to get ugly on Saturday, and I can't wait to watch.
So, also, we need Tennessee to run the football, right? Here are the four rushing totals allowed by Alabama in SEC play. You ready?
Yep.
27 yards to Arkansas, 71 yards Texas A&M, 88 yards to Old Mississippi, and 40 yards to Vanderbilt. Alabama is averaging 350 yards rushing a game. That's more yards than they've allowed in four SEC games combined. Good luck, John Kelly.
Wait, hold on.
Good luck, buddy.
How many rushing yards did Ole Miss have?
88, which is...
How is that possible?
10 yards above their average, actually.
Good
Lord. That is insane. How did they do that? There is literally not a single case to be made for anything positive coming out of this game. But that's not anything we didn't know already. And... a lot of that obviously is due to the job Nick Saban has done and where that program is. That they are just that much better than everybody else. And no, that's not a Butch Jones problem. That's not a Jim McElwain problem. That is a Nick Saban problem. The other half of that equation, of course, certainly is a Butch Jones problem, which is the offense doesn't look like it has any ability to move the football through the air. They had a really good game plan in the first half against South Carolina. It resulted in good, long, sustained drives against South Carolina. South Carolina is bad at defense. Alabama, not bad at defense. Don't know if anybody knows that about Alabama.
Good
luck, Tennessee.
I wanted to be able to give you some small piece of hope. Like, that's what I was really looking for. And I was looking at the schedule thinking, you know what? Who would have ever thought that we'd be saying this? With LSU next, maybe they'll just look past the Vols. Like, that's what you're hoping for? Like, maybe the team doesn't show up? But then I realized that there's a bye week in between. So there's really, like, I can't even use that because, like, they got a bye week after this game and then LSU.
Alabama's second string, I think, would be favored by two touchdowns.
No, that's strong.
Like, Tua Tagovailoa, the backup quarterback, could start. And I think, and everybody could be, you could play the backup running back, the backup safeties and corners, and I think you'd be a 10-point favorite, minimum.
If we, let's take that a step farther, okay? So if all the backups played, Saban got them
ready. Which will be the second, third, right, and fourth quarter. So.
But yeah, Saban gets them ready for the game and then just doesn't come out of the tunnel. It's like, you guys got this one by yourselves. No Saban on the sideline.
No coaching staff. Zero coaches.
Oh, yeah, we'll go
no
zero
trainers,
coach.
No trainers.
No coaches. No coaches and
no
just the backups.
No water boys. Every single
– got to have water boys. These guys can't squirt their own water.
All 32,000 members.
We're not a third world country.
Every – I don't know. The GDP of Alabama's athletic department is probably bigger than most countries, actually.
That is fair.
You take all 32,000 staffers that work for Nick Saban off of the field, and you just have –
very accurate number.
You just have the players calling their own plays, and they are a 14-point favorite.
Okay. That's,
I just made that number up. But I think it's accurate.
That is spectacular.
You will get zero coaching, zero training, zero medical attention, and zero support from the hydration department, and you will still crush Tennessee.
I feel like it's almost like the longest yard. Guys, you just get in there, you draw it up in the dirt, and then, you know. The other question is, if Nick Saban actually held up.
I wouldn't even use skill players. I would just use linemen. 10 linemen and Jalen Hurts.
If Nick Saban held up a sign that actually told the Vols the play that was coming, like, forget trickery, just held up an actual diagram of the upcoming play,
right,
would they still win the football?
Alabama's only allowed to run fullback dives.
Oh,
that's it.
The same play over
fullback
and over.
Fullback dive is the only play you're allowed
they
to run.
Otherwise, the left or right?
You get a penalty if you don't run a fullback dive.
Okay.
I still think they're a 14-point favorite.
That's spectacular. Oh, my God. And now, is that because of
you guys
where,
tired of this yet, Big Orange Nation?
Huh? Is that because of where the Vols are or because of where Bama is or a bit of both? Because it feels it's a bit of both.
It's both. And that's really the unfortunate part of all this, that it's very difficult to evaluate anybody against Alabama. It really is. Like we're joking around here, but Alabama has made college football so stinking boring.
Are you still watching Alabama games?
I'm not really.
I haven't watched them since Florida State. I don't turn the TV on. I'm just waiting for the Iron Bowl.
I watched the couple of drives, and then they're up 21-0, and you're going, okay, what's the point?
Yeah. I might watch the LSU game. Might.
I mean,
now
if
that
LSU
has won two
in
a row.
I had tickets to that game, and I'm like, meh.
If you
I don't
two
even want to go to an Alabama
it?
LSU game.
Like, if you two, of all people, aren't watching all of this, then regular guy does not even.
It's a waste of time.
Yeah, sitting there, you're like, oh.
I got 30 other games I need to watch.
Like, I'd rather watch Florida and whatever the hell they're wearing against Texas A&M than watch Alabama play Arkansas.
I mean, that's.
Or whoever.
Wow. That is those uniforms, by the way, for Florida.
Oh, my God. They were as bad as expected. And you, as a lifelong diehard, probably particularly offended by them.
Oh, my God.
Are you off that train now?
Oh, I got off it last week.
Once
those things came on,
not allowed to get off.
I'm done.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
Over.
Much like Florida season.
To the point Julian's making and you're making and we joke around about here, it after Clemson loses on Saturday night, you see Washington lose, all hell breaks loose in college football the last two weekends. Everybody, there's still going to be a bunch of losses too, by the way, because Michigan, Penn State, and Ohio State still have to play each other. TCU, Oklahoma, a lot of games still. I mean, everyone's still going to be losing football games. And I just think Alabama's immune to that right now. They are just too good. They're unbelievably balanced on offense. It's the best rushing attack I think there is in college football, with the best coach and the best players and probably the best defense. I don't know how you beat that. Now, it doesn't mean it can't happen. It doesn't mean somebody doesn't pull something out of a hat and you know, we've seen it. You need a kick six or Tim Tebow to beat Alabama, and maybe there's one of those out there and that can happen, but
there's not.
As of right now, this team looks unbeatable.
All hope is lost, especially in the SEC at this point. I know LSU had a great win against Auburn. There's no way they
was it a great win?
LSU ain't coming close.
I mean,
to
they
Alabama.
Came back from 20-0 down. Like,
yeah, yeah.
For LSU, considering they lost to Troy 3 weeks ago, great job.
No, I guess
this
I
was more about
this.
Auburn. To
yeah,
me.
You
they
can't.
Cannot,
that's
no
the,
balance.
The
at
thing
all.
Is, I think Auburn's a championship level team. They just are poorly coached.
Right. Auburn Ooh. Can't get out of
their
own way.
Their coaches. No, it's Gus Malzahn. Whoever's running things over there has wrecked their season.
Wow.
Ruined the Clemson game with the play calling. Ruined the LSU game with the play calling.
They were up 20-0.
I know, but it's purely coaching.
Okay.
When you don't make a single adjustment and like your play call, you run 17 straight first down run calls, and then your only pass plays are throwing the ball 30 yards down the field. You have a coaching problem.
Okay.
Well, it's a.
It's funny because Kevin Steele's the guy that everybody thought was the bad coach.
The defense didn't play well.
The defense.
They didn't play well, but the offense never changed anything. Well, that's on the coaches.
Well, is Georgia our last hope?
No, yeah. There's no way.
To beat Bama?
There's
I mean,
no
there
way.
Is no hope. Like, Georgia no is way. An okay football team beating up on bad football.
I don't
team.
Care. No, they're really good.
They're
I don't
really
care
good.
How many yards yeah. Jake Fromm threw for against Missouri. It was Missouri.
Yeah, okay.
He ain't doing that against Bama.
I think Georgia's a lot better than you're giving them credit for, Fitzy. But look around the country.
Fromm ain't beating Bama.
Look around the whole country and be like, Kelly Bryant's not playing right now for Clemson. He gets hurt and they lose to Syracuse.
I've decided.
Like, what? Who's going to beat them?
I've decided our only hope is Baker Mayfield. He's our only hope.
That might be.
He's our only hope.
But they can't stop anybody either.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. He's our only hope.
Well, the only hope we always have, Joe Rexroad from the Tennessee.
Kenny Hill.
Joe going to join us up next. We'll get Joe's thoughts on all things Vols, all things Monday Night Football. We'll do that next up, Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5, The Game.